Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
This is primetime on Football Friday. 1080 The Fan.
We're going to ring that championship bell.
60 minutes. Let's open up the whole can of kick ass and kill them all. Let the paramedics sort them out. Ready? Burn.
This is a Football Friday edition of Primetime with Isaac and Suk.
Brought to you by the Odyssey app. Download the Odyssey app, follow 1080 The Fan, and enable push notifications to get the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and more.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right. Welcome back. Hope you're having a nice little Thursday. Friday, by the way. It's your sports bros.
Club 1080. This needs to happen because someone, one of our listeners, the reach of this program is amazing. Because we were talking about the Quality Inn, and we were reading their views.
Sandy and 80 Second.
Sandy and 80 Second. Someone has said that there is one on an adjacent corner that is much worse. And I gave you the one that was 2.4 stars on the Quality Inn. I've got one that is on that adjacent corner.
Does it start with a one?
Yes. And let me tell you, reading those reviews, you asked who stays at the Quality Inn. The people that can't get into the Evergreen Inn, that's who stays at the, like, it is, this is some special stuff.
Evergreen Inn.
Yeah, we're going to we're going to read some more reviews Club 1080, cuz when I clicked on that, the first review was like, you had me. I'm hooked.
So we were talking about finding a worse hotel than the Quality Inn on Sandy and 82nd.
And I think
we've
done.
And all we had to do was go right across the street.
Yes. The first word is in the review is, this place is bizarre.
that could be good.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Right. This is going to be good.
We got to roll. Joey Harrington coming up at 5:30. We'll recap the Ducks' loss in the Rose Bowl. You probably saw that.
Yeah, it's not good.
See how he feels. But
it was the Quality Inn of football games.
Right now, it is time for the Hot 5 at 5:12.
Oh!
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, golly, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victorico's Mexican Food. Discover Victorico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorico's.com.
Yeah, put them in there!
Number five.
Well, we have two crappy bowl games today. Texas State beat North Texas 30-28 in the Who Gives a Rip Bowl.
That would be the ServPro First Responder Bowl. Have some respect for our first responders.
Look, can we get to the only game that matters today? The only one?
It's already happening.
It's happening right now.
Yeah, and that is the Sooks Mayo Bowl.
That's right.
Where Sook, without knowing anything about the fact that Virginia Tech is missing pretty much everyone off of their team, bet the Virginia Tech Hokies +9.5 against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. And apparently, PJ Fleck is rowing the boat towards Turdville because
if you surround yourself with turds, you're headed towards Turdville.
It is 7-0 Hokies at the end of one.
Let's go! Cash and checks!
17 points of play in the wheel right there, fella.
Dude, that's free $20 right in my pocket right there. God, I love gambling.
I mean, it's 3/4 left, but...
Hey, look. I'm up... I'm getting 9.5. Are you kidding me right now? I'm up 2 touchdowns. I love this. And I'm getting a bet against
Number
PJ
four.
Fleck.
Excited. Boise State loses offensive coordinator Dirk Cutter to retirement. He is 65, and he has had enough of the new landscape of college football.
I love that he just got to the point he's like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
He says Boise is behind in NIL, and other teams are offering his players between 2 and 10 times what they can. On his way out, though, he did a nice thing. He donated to the Broncos NIL Collective, and he urged fans to follow suit.
Well, that's I feel bad. Like, I got a family that I know, and they're good people, and he donates to – they're not wealthy, and he donates to the Washington State NIL Fund. And, man, I feel for those people out there that are donating $100 of their hard-earned money. Like, what – you really think that makes a difference?
We all pull this rope in the same direction, Jace.
I don't think that's the way this works, boys.
Alabama co-defensive coordinator Colin Hitchler will not return. Dangerously close to Hitler.
Yeah, it's a little...
Or Bitchler.
Well, it's not a good year for old Kalen DeBoer. Losing 4 games at Alabama year one after Saban.
Well, it's funny. They fired their co-defensive coordinator. They were like 9th in defense.
Yeah, I know. Right? A little strange.
Yikes.
Well, you can't fire yourself if you're Kalen DeBoer, so...
Gary Anderson did.
He did fire himself. I don't think that's why, though.
The Gare Bear. Jets will interview Mike Vrabel for their head coaching position. All of a sudden, he's a hot name again. I don't know why.
Yeah, Vrabel's interviewed for it. Lewis Riddick has interviewed for the GM position. I think Rex Ryan interviewed. I like now that there's
Ron Rivera, too, I think.
You what?
Ron Rivera, I thought.
Yeah, Ron Rivera interviewed for it. Yeah, they're being open about everyone that they're looking at. Which, by the way, pretty much all of those are... Like, Vrabel's the first one that actually makes sense. You need an entire regime change there.
Tua is out for the Dolphins this weekend against the Jets. It will be Tyler Huntley starting, and the Dolphins must win in order to at least have a chance at the playoffs.
Yeah, if Denver wins against the Chiefs backups, they're in. If Denver loses and Miami wins,
they're in.
If both of those lose and the Bengals win,
they're in.
They're in. And they got the Steelers, who have nothing to play for, but Tomlin says they need to play better, so they're going to play guys.
The Ducks lose a 5-star quarterback who just got onto campus. Let's go to Buck for the pronunciation.
That would be Jaren Sangapolutele.
Yeah, he's a Hawaiian kid who flipped from Cal to Oregon in the early signing period. He enrolled early. He'd even been practicing with the Ducks, but now he's bolting.
Yeah, he's a 5-star kid. It was a big flip. Everyone thought he was going to stay at Cal. And I saw in his thing where he said once he got to Oregon, he realized he wasn't a priority, which,
well,
how do you realize you're not a priority when you've been there like 2 weeks?
Well, I think maybe if you get a look at Dante Moore and he's got that thing going in practice, and maybe you catch wind that they're going for a transfer too.
Yeah.
Well, and you got Novosad there too.
Yeah. And it does sound like a lot of the players, like Tez Johnson came out. We've had 3 or 4 players that are really, really propping up Dante Moore and saying that he has been lights out.
Yeah, that's what they keep saying.
So, you know, maybe that's one of those things where you just realize, hey, I'm not getting on the field. And Cal's quarterback, which is where he originally was going to go, he's in the portal, so maybe he feels like you jump into Cal and you hit the ground running.
He thinks he can start right away, and going to Cal gives him that path.
And by the way, he hasn't said he's going to Cal.
It's just, no, it's just speculated that's where he'll end up.
Let's do it. That's it, baby. Shut it from the rooftops.
America's number one fighting force.
Number one.
My number one fan.
Number one.
Number one.
Another year, another NBA star requests a trade. Jimmy Butler has now been suspended by the Miami Heat after saying he wants out. He is citing a loss of joy.
Yeah, he came out and said that he loves Miami, just not playing basketball there. He loves his personal life, and they asked him, can you get that joy back here? And he said, no. So Miami suspended him for 7 games for multiple instances of conduct unbecoming. And then they said that Miami has agreed that this is not a situation that they can move forward with, and they will listen to.
Yeah, they're going to trade him.
Trade offers.
Pat Riley originally responded with a, "We are not trading Jimmy Butler."
Yes,
but I mean, there's not much he can do.
Well, Jimmy Butler can blow up a situation like no one's business.
I know, and Pat Riley, you know, Pat Riley hates that.
Yes,
if they get in the same room together, Pat Riley is wringing that dude's neck.
Yeah. So,
but Butler won't provide a list of preferred destinations. He says he believes he can make any team a contender, including your Portland Trailblazers,
but not the Miami Heat.
Not the Miami Heat.
Yeah, not Miami. Yeah.
There's no joy there.
I think Jimmy likes Jimmy, and we're getting a little long in the tooth there.
What a bum.
Well, he is one of the more interesting guys in the league because
he's a baby.
Well, he wears out his welcome, but, you know.
He's like Rodgers, but only not as good.
And he's not the player that he once was. I'm going to see how old Jimmy Butler is.
Hot 5 brought to you by Victor Rico's Mexican Food, a hit with the whole family.
Yeah.
Order in store, online, or delivered to your door at victorricos.com. When you think of flavor, think Victor Rico's.
He's 35, so.
Let's find more sun.
His best days are behind him.
More sun in Miami.
All right. Bielema versus Beamer is still going. I don't know if you knew that. They're still fighting.
Really?
Do you know that?
I do. I do want to know. I did not know, I do want to know.
It is, and we'll get to that next. And then we'll talk to Joey Harrington on the fan. All right, Joey Harrington recaps Oregon's Rose Bowl defeat next. But I saw that Brett Bielema and Shane Beamer are still going at it.
Yeah, there was some. So I don't even remember what that rub was over, other than Beamer was losing his S, and then Bielema was laughing at him from the other side.
So the thing was that Bielema came over to check on an injured player who was near the South Carolina sideline.
Okay,
and he did this, and I'm for those that are not watching on YouTube, he did the T signal,
with a giant T.
The hands out. You know, when it's a signal when to call off the dogs when on a kickoff,
uh-huh.
when it's a touchback.
Yeah.
Oftentimes the players will put out the T hands or the T sign.
Okay,
to let people know, look, this isn't being returned. It's out of the end zone.
Sure,
you can let it. Well, the reason Bielema did that is because apparently in the third quarter, one of the I keep saying Virginia Tech because Beamer used to coach at Virginia Tech?
His dad.
Frank Beamer. That's right. That's why I keep saying that. One of the South Carolina players did the T, but then they proceeded to catch the ball and lateral it.
They ran a trick play after putting the T. Like, they put the safety signal out, and then they ran a play.
And Bielema did not like that. And that's why Bielema did that to the sideline. And, of course, Beamer got all butthurt and,
he had to do the hold me back thing. Like, he lost his – I didn't know that's what all that was.
Yeah, well, it looked as if at first, and this is what we were talking about when the game was on the air live as we were doing the show.
Yeah.
Was it looked like Bielema was kind of taunting Beamer that he is slowing down his offense. South Carolina wanted to go fast, mm-hmm. but he was substituting late, and Beamer was getting pissed about that.
Yeah.
But that's not what it was. Bielema was calling him out on the T sign.
The T scene.
And then they did the lateral.
Because now I see it. And you can clearly see him turn and make the T, and then afterwards, Beamer loses it.
Yeah, and there's nothing illegal.
It's just poor.
But Bielema called him out on it. He was like, it's an ethics thing.
Sure.
And he thought it was poor form, and he called him out on it.
Yeah.
And so
you're telling the other team, we need you to let up so no one gets hurt, and then you're trying to pull one over on them. So I get it.
Beamer defended the play, saying that he informed the officiating crew before the game that South Carolina intended to use the lateral after the T-bar signal and got clearance from them. He acknowledged that most teams use the signal as a touchback indicator.
Hmm.
Like, to me, that's kind of weak.
That's weak.
You have an unspoken rule if you've ever been on a PAT, right? You get down in your stance as a lineman and you ask the guy across from you, hey, are we going here? And the D lineman either shuts up and doesn't say anything. And if that's the case, then you're going, or he'll look up at you and say yay or no. And that does happen from time to time where then the D lineman fires across, and it's kind of a crappy thing because you're saying, hey, it's a crappy play. No one wants to get stepped on. Maybe the game's out of hand or whatever. And it is a gentleman's agreement. And I would like to, if that's your thing, Shane Beamer, in a crappy bowl game that you're trying to pull that crap, if I'm Bielema, I would be pissed too.
So Beamer said, you have to ask him why he didn't take it up with the officials and why he felt the need to come over here while the player, while his player was on the ground and look at me and say something to me and do that motion to me like I was full of you know what to do it.
You are.
That's what I have an issue with. I'm a competitive guy. When somebody says that to me, I'm going to respond because I thought that was Bush League, just to be completely honest. And that's when he was caught on camera, like, hold me back, bro. Yeah. I'm coming at him. Well, Beamer then posts on social media. This is why I say it's still going. They took to social media, and Beamer said he was disappointed in his team's ethics being questioned. He said, I don't take that lightly. He also reposted a video of an Illinois player looking to the sideline before dropping to a knee during a South Carolina drive late in the fourth quarter. He said, unethical looks like this, along with our running back getting his helmet ripped off at the same time, along with the Illinois player taunting him and then tossing the ball at the umpire's leg, who does nothing.
Oh, for God's sake.
So Bielema responded, and he just clarified. He said the issue had nothing to do with substitution. It had everything to do with player safety. Moments after the T-bar exchange, South Carolina had to call timeout near the Illinois goal line after a late defensive substitution to avoid a delay of game penalty. Cameras captured Beamer looking frustrated while Bielema grinned from across the field. Bielema later reposted Beamer's message while writing, Happy New Year and congrats on a great season. So he took the high road.
Yeah, red ass coaches. I just love, I would like someone to ask Shane Beamer, really, were you going to go fight Brett Bielema? That's what you were going to do? You lost control, so you were going to go fight a coach because he came over and gave the T signal?
Tell you
what,
and Brett, this is all because you schemed up a shady play.
That is shady. I've never heard of anyone doing that.
No.
But you can't do that.
No. Well, I mean,
it's like, it's almost like calling a fair catch.
Yeah.
And then,
that's exactly right. That's a good one.
It's like calling a fair catch and then running it back. You can't do that.
Which is why you checked with the officials and you're like, by the letter of the law, it's okay. It's a Bush League play. And yes, I will call into question your integrity by doing that. Because you are. You're trying to get one over on someone saying, hey, it's a player safety thing and we're going to do it anyway. Screw you, Shane Beamer.
Tell you what, if Bielema sits on him, it's over.
Yeah. I was going to say, no offense, but I'm guessing Shane Beamer loses that fight. But I love the hold me back guy. What are you going to do?
Feels like it'd be one of those where Beamer just, or Bielema just puts an arm out and little Shane Beamer's just swinging and can't quite reach him.
I just want to see, like, don't hold him back and see what happens.
Uh-oh.
What are you going to do?
Uh-oh.
That's 7-7.
The Gophers.
Yeah.
Here come the Gophies.
7-7 in the Souk Mayo Bowl.
They just ran a trick play for that touchdown.
Not worried about it.
No.
I got it.
I'd be worried about it.
My guys are taking care of business.
Coming up next, Joey Harrington recaps the Rose Bowl on The Fan. Here's Buck. Everybody give a big round of applause to Joey Harrington returning to The Fan. 1080 The Fan.
Hold on. Why am I giving a round of applause for returning when you guys were the ones who left?
Well, we're all returning.
Well,
we can't really applaud ourselves.
You haven't been on, and we have. So you are returning.
You weren't on Fridays either.
No, I know, but we've been back since you've been on.
But there are not any other days other than Friday.
Yeah, but
I'm
listen.
Not sure if you knew that,
the only person returning right now is you.
It's a valid point. We've returned.
Yeah, we've already.
I mean, you already returned like earlier in this show.
Yes,
is that
already,
what you're saying? Because Sports Talk Radio doesn't exist on any other days other than Fridays,
Friday afternoons at 5:15 in Portland is the only Sports Talk Radio.
Well, at 3 o'clock we already.
Or wait, 5:30.
We had our applause.
Yeah,
we already.
Yeah, we had a rousing applause. Better than yours, quite frankly. Yeah.
I mean, the people went wild.
Yeah.
Oh, as they should. I'm not going to lie. I've spent a couple weeks feeling a bit empty. Inside.
I know. You didn't know we were gone, did you? Were you prepared to do a hot take interview every Friday and then we just don't call you? Or did anybody contact you?
Well, one time there was some sort of conflict. It was like a duck basketball game maybe or something. And then like last week was Christmas or something. I don't know. I was just sitting by the phone and just got nothing. So I figured it was like, well, I guess they're not showing up.
It's like that Escobar meme. He's just sitting on the porch swing out in Central Oregon, just staring out at the apocalypse.
It's like when you're younger, waiting on the girl to call.
Yeah. Staring at the phone. Come on.
Well, I hate, I don't know what to say. I mean,
We don't need to talk about it.
It's not good.
What do you want to talk about? Like the Lions?
I don't know.
I mean, come on. What surprised you most? How about that question?
The nature of how it happened.
I think that's everybody.
We've, we've all been part of teams games where it's like, it happens, right? Like literally this happens to everybody. It sucked that it happened on the biggest stage after they had been the only undefeated team. Like, I don't know. Like, I still don't know. How many days out are we? Like, and it's still just like, what the hell happened? Yeah.
Well, and now, unfortunately, it becomes like, as you mentioned, everyone has these games. They just, you do. But when you have this one, now we have to deal with the narrative. And I already hear it from Duck Fan, the national media, and, you know, some of the national fan bases. I mean, the memes out there. Look, Oregon's got a swagger, and Lanning certainly puts himself up on the pedestal with some of the stuff. And so, you know, when you make noise and you fall on your face, people are going to come for you. And so I think that makes it hard. But the narrative somehow that this team wasn't a championship level team, or that this team was a paper tiger, or none of what they did mattered. Yeah. That's the part that bothers me, because you don't go 13-0. You don't beat three of the 12 playoff teams, 11, because you were one of them, and then have a bad outing that certainly does not go your way, and you kind of get embarrassed and things spiral out of control in one half, and then somehow that's an indictment on everything that you are, everything that you've built. That's the problem that I have, is the sweeping judgment and throw everything away because of the way it went down.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty standard. Yeah. I mean, that's... You know, having worked in sports talk media for long enough, I mean, I'm sure you could count the number of times that any time something like this happens, that's immediately where it goes. Like for me, it was one of those things where, and I still don't even want to, I don't want to learn the guy's name, but number four, like it was so traumatic. It was like, what in the world? Who is that? Where did he come from? And how is he doing all, like, and it was almost like this, we were talking about it too afterwards. We went down 34-0 without turning the football over.
Yeah, it's true.
Not a fumble, not a pick six. Not a short field, it was just like, that was the baffling part, is like, how I don't know.
So here's
go ahead.
Well, I think that, I mean, everything Sook said about the narrative, like, you can't control the narratives. They're always going to be out there, whatever. We all know here that Oregon was really, really good and possibly the best team in the country outside of Ohio State. Now, Ohio State has proven that they're the best. Okay. But I think it's just, when you're that elite, like we thought Oregon was, I think there are some that think that you shouldn't get boat raced 34-0 and a half, no matter who you're playing. You know what I'm saying? Like, you say everybody has these games, but do they, if you're that good?
I mean, I would, and I don't have... hard concrete, well, in September of 2019. But I would venture a guess that you can go back through all the Super Bowl champions, right, and look at a week where they lost, 42-7 or, 35-3. Like, there are those games. And this is what we talked about quite a few times, is this wasn't trying to get through an 11-game schedule and win the AP poll and walk out with a national championship. This was trying to do something that only two teams in the history of football, college or NFL, had done, which is they had to go 16-0. Right? This was an NFL schedule of a slog to be able to get to that point. And I think it is a bit, there's two things. One, I think people enjoy jumping on Oregon for a whole, host of reasons. One, and then, like we've talked about, we've never won a national championship. We are not part of that club. Like, we are still trying to be there. And there's a tinge of jealousy, from the other schools about what we, may or may not get, or the favoritism. Anyway, that's one thing. Number two, what was I going to say? What was number two? People are making this big deal about Oregon not being good enough. Well, let's go back to, you know, a couple weeks ago where, you know, SMU didn't belong and Indiana didn't belong. Then Tennessee gets absolutely boat raced by this Ohio State team. And then Georgia loses to Notre Dame and Alabama loses. Like, it feels like this is the narrative of the moment. Right. People are never going to talk about the SEC not being good enough this year, which they weren't. They weren't as good as the Big Ten this year. So that's not going to be a narrative. First, it was Indiana and SMU didn't belong, and now it's Oregon falling on their face. So I think that, you know, it's a whole combination of things that we just happened to play the championship game in the quarterfinals, and that sucked. And we played horrible.
Yeah, to your point, I was looking at the national championship game. You know that we haven't had a national championship game in college football decided by less than two touchdowns since 2018.
Yeah, it's been a while. I remember LSU beat the brakes off Clemson. Yeah. TCU got absolutely drilled.
It was like 58-3 or
65-7.
Yeah.
Georgia over TCU. Last year, Michigan beat Washington 34-13. Georgia over Alabama 33-18.
Yeah, so you're telling me that TCU team that got all the way to the national championship game was a horrible, horrible football team and didn't deserve it. Like, it happens. It sucks, but it happens.
And to your point, that was and we said it going into the game. Now, I thought Oregon was going to win. I thought the quarterback was going to be the difference, but I still didn't have a great feel about it. I didn't bet it. But I did say I thought that was the national championship game. I think whoever won that, it was going to win the whole thing. It's just we played it in the quarters as opposed to getting it in the championship game. And the other one, like I thought about, was when you mentioned the NFL. I remember the Denver Broncos the year with Peyton Manning that had the second best offense in NFL history. I think they were averaging like 37 a game. They were 13-3, and they ran into a Seattle Seahawks team. And what was that? 40. It was like 45-3, something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me that the Denver Bronco offense was bad. It just, on that particular day, for what, opening snap goes over your head and, you know, thanks for coming. The ball starts rolling downhill. So, unfortunately, that does become the narrative. And like you said, I do think people like to hate on Oregon. I saw one on Twitter where it was funny. It was the Simpsons meme where everyone's gathering with the torches from the Simpsons movie. And it was all of college football Twitter uniting to hate on Oregon. And, you know, and some of that is jealousy. But I do think that Oregon brings a lot of that on themselves because Oregon puts themselves out there with the "we're mighty different" and the duck riding around in a circle in the Big Ten and bringing a duck to media day. And, you know, they certainly like to poke the bear and put themselves out there. And when you do that, that does come with a certain element of people love to see the, I don't know if you want to call it upstart or the cocky kid. Everyone loves to see that kid punched in the face. And that's just, I don't know, that comes with the territory, but I don't think Oregon shies away from it. In fact, I think they embrace it.
Yeah, no way. I agree. It feels like we need to go to commercial. Maybe I just don't want to talk about this anymore.
Did you ever have a college or pro, did you ever have a rematch with a team and that happened? Team you beat the first time, and then you probably did in pros many times.
No, I never beat anybody twice in the pros. Come on now. I barely beat anybody once.
But, you know, the second time, I don't know. It's just weird. They got manhandled up front on both lines. And it's
okay. We can, there's two things that we need to talk about when we come back from the break, because it feels like we need to.
You're doing a great job of producing. Yes.
Okay.
All right. All right. Well,
two things
coming up next with Joey Harrington on The Fan. All right. We're back with Joey Harrington. Two things that he teased. We have to talk about two things about Oregon's loss.
What happened? And I'm going to ask you, Soup, what happened at right tackle?
That was really odd to me, because the tackle play all year since the Boise State game, that's what
has been spectacular.
Yeah, that's against Boise State when you watch it. And this was the part we talked about that was frustrating to me, was Boise State wasn't doing anything super exotic. A lot of times they were just beating the two tackles. And I can understand the interior, but the tackles have been rock solid. And I'll say this. Ohio State has good. I don't think they have great edge players. Sawyer is good. Tui Malo, or I'm butchering his name, 44. Tui Tumalau, right? Both very, very good players. But we saw Oregon handle them. And for whatever reason, you lay off whatever. Ohio State got pressure just rushing their front four and sometimes rushing their three. And
yeah. Sawyer was an All-American. I mean, I don't think there was a shot when Oregon was, I don't think I saw a broadcast shot where 33 was not in the picture.
Yes. And sometimes
that was surprising.
It was kind of shocking to me, to be honest with you. And I was kind of going through and I was reading different stuff. And, you know, he was the guy that kind of started the Michigan ruckus with the flag. He was the one that was ripping the flag away. And, you know, some people just said that, for better or worse, lit a fire, and that one of the things about him was he's physically impressive, but sometimes didn't always show up in the biggest spots. And he did against Tennessee, and he did against Oregon. For whatever reason, someone lit a fire under that guy's ass, and he's a very, very good player. He's an NFL player, but he played like a Bosa brother against Oregon, and that was one thing that didn't happen in the first game, and it certainly happened in this one. I thought him and Caleb Downs absolutely destroyed Oregon's game plan, and they did not do that in the first game.
Yeah. Okay. So for all of this horribleness that we have been in, we've watched and have been talking about, there was still a moment in the second half where, you know, we scored going into halftime, we scored coming out, we stopped them, and we had the ball. So it was 34-14. Yeah. It was second and 10 on our own 20, right? Wherever we were on our own, in our own territory. And they ran essentially, you know, a type of like a smash concept with a, you know, a short square out on the inside. And Dylan looked at Tez on the underneath route, and he thought about it. And then he held it to try and throw the corner route. He took a sack and went to 3rd and 17. Had he thrown, like I have gone back so many times, had he thrown the quick out and taken the 6, now we're 3rd and 4, and we can, you know, maybe Tez makes a miss, maybe we, you know, and now we're moving again. And that was the momentum. Like if we go and get another one, now it's 34-21. And I know it's a pipe dream, but it's like, God, like that, for as horrible as it was, I can come back to that moment and say that felt like the turning point for me.
Because Ohio State scored, Oregon had gotten the stop and gotten the ball back, but then when they punted on that, then Ohio State went down and scored. And that was the 41. And once they got to 41, there wasn't even enough possessions. Like you started to look at it, like they're going to get the ball back 4 more times. There's not enough possessions to win the game. Right. And I really thought Gabriel and Joey Galloway mentioned this at the half. I thought Ohio State going to that kind of that 4-2 with the 3 safety look and basically having Caleb Downs roam the middle of the field, and the fact that Oregon couldn't run the ball to run them out of that safety look, I thought it really caused Gabriel problems. That was, I thought that was one of the worst games he played from a recognition standpoint. He has been really good this year of playing on time and getting rid of the ball and making snap decisions. And I don't think I've seen him hold the ball quite like that all year. And to me, when a quarterback holds the ball, it just means he's confused. He doesn't understand where he's going with it, and he's overthinking things, or he's not taking the checkdowns. And so when I saw him holding the ball, obviously the O-line didn't play well. I mean, they didn't play well at all. But I think some of those sacks were he sitting in the pocket waiting to see something.
I was literally saying, as you were saying that, I was like, you know what? I think we just answered points 1 and 2. Like we answered those two things. I think it's a chicken or egg. Did Dylan's inability to get the ball out of his hands create situations for the tackles to hang on, you know, try and hang on too long and put them in a bad spot, or did the tackles then, you know, or did the tackles play put Dylan in a spot where he felt uncomfortable and then couldn't make decisions like that? But between those two things, that was, well, and their inability to run the football. Okay, between those three things, that was what it was for the offense.
Yeah, if you go back and you watch the first game that they played, one, Ohio State tried to play man coverage and Oregon cooked them. Ohio State did not play man coverage this game. They played a two-high safety look, even, like I said, three safeties. Evan Stewart wasn't in the game, and he was such a difference maker in the first one because he was a guy that could take the top off of the defense and make him respect it. Two, Oregon ran the ball really effectively. They didn't run the ball at all. I think if you take out the sacks even, I think they ran for like 20-something yards. And then that leads to, like you said, holding onto the ball. And you go back and watch that first game, Ohio State got some pressure. They just never got there. But they were close a couple times, but Gabriel was getting rid of the ball and making them pay. Well, if you hold onto the ball, like you said, for a half a count to a second more, you know, people always look at the analytics of stuff, and the difference between like getting rid of the ball in 2.4 seconds and 2.9 seconds or 3.2 seconds in football can be an eternity. That's the difference between a guy reaching out and brushing your jersey and a guy reaching out and grabbing you and throwing you to the ground.
Bingo. Hey, can we talk about something good?
Yeah, sure. Let's do something.
Tell us.
Tez Johnson is amazing, and not as a football player. I mean, he's a fantastic football player, but like, you want to talk about, you know, we've talked about the national, the narrative about Oregon, you know, the splash, and but you still, you know, can't win it. I'm sorry, if I got people like Tez Johnson out there representing our university, I'm feeling pretty dang good about it. You know, if I've got a bright spot that I'm taking away from that game, it is watching that young man play, compete, and how he handles himself on and off the field. Yeah,
they did a good feature on him on the pregame. I don't know if you saw it. Of course, we've seen that feature a million times, but sure. It's about the Knicks family and his relationship there. He's a good kid. He's a good egg, that one. Well, that's good. Okay, now what else is good? Next year good?
I don't know. I mean, sure, we'll be fine, but, you know.
Well, see, yeah, I'm sure they'll be fine, too. They're in good hands. You have a good program.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Felt like an opportunity.
Dude, that thing was teed up. It really was. Now, they ran into a buzzsaw. I think they just got a bad draw. I really think I'm with Suk. That was the championship game. At the same time, I just wonder in 5 or 10 years we look back and go, man, out of all these chances that Oregon's had, because you kind of retool every year, right? I mean, like,
it's a reset every year.
Every year, it depends on what transfers you get, maybe a hit with a Caleb Downs type player or a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder in 5 to 10 years if we don't look back and go, man, that was it. That was the chance right there. This one, it hurts. It stings.
I don't think I'll look back at it that way. Because of the fact that they would have had to win 16 games, right? They still had to win 3 more games.
Yeah. Well, 2 more.
Right? Well, this one, quarterfinal, semifinal, championship, right? The one that, you know, and so, all right, the 01 team, the 2010 team, the 2014 team, the 14 team or the 15, or whatever March was last year was, I always get that confused. And then this team, which one do you look back on and say, man,
I feel like this one, I really do. I feel like this one.
Well, the Auburn one was,
it was pretty close.
You were right there.
See, the 2010, that's the one I compare this to the 2010.
Yeah.
And I say, man, that's the 2010 is the one where we should have had it.
Well, you almost did. And you're right. Here, you almost didn't. But, yeah, you might be right. Uh-huh. Because the 2015 one might be a little bit more like this one in a sense that, hey, you know, Ohio State was probably the better team in the end, right? Like they were that year, and I think they were this year. So maybe the way they got, you know, the way we talked about this yesterday, but maybe the way Oregon got beat up in that game makes you feel a little better in a sense that maybe they weren't going to win this tournament. Maybe they weren't going to go 16-0. I mean, they got manhandled, dude. Yeah. So I just
don't know if anyone else was going to manhandle them. I don't know if anyone else was capable of manhandling.
But no matter where you meet Ohio State in the field, I don't know if they're beating that team.
The thing that I was talking yesterday about, like, what was the missing piece? Because I think this is a championship level team, and he's ran into a buzzsaw. But you've proven on any given day you can beat them, and just not in this one. But I looked at Caleb Downs and I looked at Jeremiah Smith, And I thought they were gravitational players. And Oregon has had those guys over the years. I think Kalodinati was a gravitational player. You know, I think some of the backs that they've had have been that way. Marcus was that way. I mean, they do happen. It's not like Oregon doesn't get them. But Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs were the two best players on the field, and they were absolute game changers. And as good as this Oregon team was, I don't think they had one of those guys on either side of the ball. And so when you look at these recruiting classes they're putting together where you're getting these five-star kids, to me, the next evolution of Oregon, if there is one, to win one, is to have that. And like that Moore kid who's the number one receiver, and then the McNutt, the kid that was going to go to Ohio State, they talk about these kids like they do Jeremiah Smith, like they do Caleb Downs, starters from day one, true freshmen coming in. And maybe that's the final piece, is putting together a roster like this one where there's really no weaknesses, and then you add in one or two gravitational players, and maybe that's the difference that eventually gets you over the hump.
Maybe we should have just won it my year. Maybe they should have put us against Miami.
Oh, my God, you
know,
yes.
We would have beat them. No, we wouldn't have.
Do you have any eligibility left?
No, and I actually don't have any physical ability left, so that's like a different, like, eligibility and physical ability, neither one are.
I want to ask you that, though. Like, your team, which was phenomenal, and you should have had the right to go play Miami. Do you, because Miami had those guys, you both were great teams, not a lot of weaknesses. Miami had gravitational players. Do you think you had, you were one? I mean, do you think you had two or three guys on that team, or were you just a really good collection of talent?
I think that, and I'm trying to think, I think Rashad Bowman was that type of player, the type of play, you know, I think of a guy who could make a play and change a game, right? I don't know. I mean, no, we did not have the collection of players that team did. I mean, we've had this conversation, and in my opinion, that was the greatest. The one that was that, yeah, probably that team. That was the greatest team in college football history. Yeah,
it's really good.
That being said, I still truly believe all we needed was a shot, right? If we play him 10 times, you know, do we lose 8 of them? We lose 9 of them? I don't know. But all we needed was one, right? In the same way that Craig Krenzel just needed one.
Yeah. Or Arizona State.
Yeah.
Against Texas.
Just one shot.
Of course, they didn't win, but
came close.
Yeah.
And then we're not having this conversation because we already got one hanging on the wall, right?
And that's the crappy part, is in this system, you would have had your chance.
Yeah, that's true.
You would have had an opportunity to go prove it. In fact, under the old system, the two best teams in this tournament right now are Notre Dame and Ohio State, and neither one of them would be in.
How about that?
Yeah. This Ohio State team that may end up, you know, where people saying, well, this is one of the best Ohio State teams of all time, they would have never had a chance to even play for a national championship.
And nobody would have even said they were deserving of being in because they lost the Michigan game.
We would have just dismissed them and written them off and whatever.
So it would have been like Oregon, Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Texas.
I like that. You guys should have won.
Idea.
Let's go back to the 14 playoff. Can we just hit the rewind button and go back to the 14?
Well, we did say it would be harder.
Yeah.
This is going to 12, it's harder because you got to beat more elite teams. The quest continues, J. Joseph Harrington. Hopefully it's a great 2025 for you. How was the holiday? Everything okay over there? The kids get everything from Santa?
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. January 1st sucked.
Fantastic.
Wah, wah, wah.
Screw Santa. So, yeah, 2025 sucks already.
Yeah. Well, and Duck basketball didn't look very good last night.
No, I didn't.
Maybe we could talk about the volleyball team.
Or? Yeah, it goes. Yeah, the volleyball team's good, right?
How's softball, the golf team?
I don't know.
Golf team's still good?
Track and field.
I think so.
Track and field.
There you go.
All right.
I don't know.
We'll talk to you. I'm sorry. You're so sad.
I am.
I'm sad with you.
Not really, though.
No, I am. I'm very sad.
Yeah.
I didn't want Oregon to lose that way. Come on.
Fair.
We'll talk to you next week.
That makes me happy.
We'll be here. I promise. I love you.
Hang in there.
Okay. That's the great Joey Harrington. Ah, so sad.
By the way, I had to look it up just for my own. I had to be reminded. Yeah. That Miami team.
Yeah.
Ed Reed, mm-hmm. Andre Johnson, mm-hmm. Brian McKinney, mm-hmm. Clinton Portis, mm-hmm. DJ Williams, Jeremy Shockey, mm-hmm. Jonathan Vilma, Mike Rumpf, Phillip Buchanan, Antrel Roll, Vince Wilfork,
Jeez.
Willis McGahee. Should I keep going?
Yes.
I mean, it's just
I want you to keep going. And then Ken Dorsey.
Ken Dorsey back there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Hey. Ken Dorsey, at one point, I think, was the winningest quarterback in college football history.
Well, not because of Ken Dorsey.
Not because of Ken Dorsey. But he is right. That the back-to-back, Ohio State got him. Craig freaking Krenzel.
They beat him.
Got him.
I've got the latest on Luigi, the handsome healthcare perp, healthcare murder perp.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the latest.
Hey!
That's coming up next in the club on The Fan.